What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Arnies. We are two wet blankets trying to expose magicians for being phonies. Looking at you next, Chris Angel. I'm Matt Johnson, and my talk show ended actually very similarly to this one.
And I'm Austin Terry. And believe it or not, this very podcast is in a tied ratings race with Jimmy Kimmel.
On today's show, we are back to talk about a new release. It's been a few weeks since we've done that, and it's been even longer, I feel like, since we talked about anything with a horror flair. And today we're doing both with a new sensation, Late Night with the Devil, which you can also now stream on Shudder, as I happily discovered today. Austin, you've been out and about traveling for 4 weeks, and it's good to have you back. And it seems only fitting that we're talking about something spooky today, because I know how much you love it.
Yeah, it's been almost a month off from the podcast, which is crazy, but it's good to be back. And, you know, I got to come back with a bang and bring a scary movie with me.
That's true. That's true. I thought you might do that, and you certainly didn't disappoint.
Some listeners might just be scared that I'm back. So maybe they got used to you and Keith.
Well, I think it might be the opposite. I think we may have spooked some viewers with a 4 week period where we just went balls to the wall. Like, hey, let's predict Fast and Furious 11. Let's talk about Cobra Kai for an hour. Let's see if we can compare M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening and We Bought a Zoo. We were on one. So I think maybe people might kind of get a good feeling. They're going to see the name of this episode. They're going to be like, oh, okay, we're back to a little bit of normalcy. So, you know, we welcome your return along with the audience.
Yeah, I remember standing on a train station in Tokyo and sending you guys a text that said, man, you guys really went crazy with the topics the past few weeks.
We did. We did not hold back. It was fun. But yeah, like we said, today, I think let's just go ahead and get into it, Austin. Since you were the one that kind of was championing this movie, I had heard about it. I'm not even sure if I had seen a trailer. Maybe I saw like random clips or something. I don't know. I knew it exists. I knew people were kind of talking about it. But yeah, was there anything else that went into why you were interested in it? Had you heard more things? Like, were you anticipating it for a while? And then kind of once you get through that, I'm very curious to hear your non-spoiler thoughts on Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, the main thing for me with this one is I've kind of been chasing that Barbarian high for scary movies. And the way Barbarian came about when we covered it for the podcast was we just kept seeing it on social media and that hype was building. And it was the same thing for Late Night with the Devil. I kept seeing like creators I follow and just random people. Every now and then this movie would like pop up on social media and I'd be like, I got to check that out. And it was never playing in theaters because it was kind of a festival darling. I've just been looking for a great scary movie. And was excited to go check this one out. And I'm going to kind of break form, but since I was the one that kind of pitched this to you of covering it for the podcast, I kind of want to know right off the bat what your initial non-spoiler thoughts are.
That's true. Since I kind of do like the intro host duties, I don't think I ever get to go first when it comes to giving my non-spoiler thoughts. So this will be fun. Yeah, I think the other fun thing when kind of looking into this movie, like I said, I hadn't heard too much. Well, I shouldn't say that. I guess somehow I just missed the hype of it. And then once it was kind of growing and people were really excited, that's when I started to catch on to it. And it's cool to see like these lower budget horror movies. I don't know if you want to call them comedy. There's certainly a lot of levity, but just kind of those tonal type movies. I think we saw something similar with Talk to Me last year, which was kind of a low budget Australian movie in a similar vein. I think this is also an Australian production, or at least partly. So
Australian directors.
Yeah. So kind of similar there. It's kind of cool to see that I guess I can't even really technically call it Hollywood, whatever you want to call it. Like the film business is giving these types of movies more of a platform. Usually this would have just popped up on Shudder and you go, oh, have you seen Late Night with the Devil, David Dismalchian from Dune or whatever you know him from? Like he's in it, you might like it. It's like, oh, okay. It's nice that these are getting theater runs now. I think that's really cool. So whenever you brought it up, I was like, oh yeah, you know, we should do that. That would be a good fit. And to get into my non-spoiler thoughts, I had a wonderful little hour and a half watching this movie. I thought it was a great time. I'm not going to be negative, like, based on its kind of notoriety over the last month, since I think it premiered at South by Southwest, I want to say, that's when I started to hear a lot about it. I didn't know anything about it before, like, it had its kind of, like, red carpet debut, so to speak. So was it overhyped? Maybe a little, like, I didn't think it was, like, the greatest thing in the world. You know, we're talking about stuff like Barbarian or Talk to Me, the movies that have, like, a similar feel. I personally definitely liked those types of movies a lot more. I think this one is like a technical marvel, without question. When it comes to the actual content story, how they navigate that, it's very good. It's just, it didn't scream as like super special to me, which is fine. But I loved pretty much everything else about it. I thought the characters were super intriguing. I really appreciated the subtlety of the movie. It didn't feel like they needed to spell every single thing out, which I quite appreciated. I loved the framing device and kind of the prologue is like, this is a lost tape we discovered and like, check out what happened that fateful night. And then the movie plays out kind of in real time, which was really cool. David Desmalchian is great. I want to see him be a lead in more things, I think, since this is kind of getting to be a very much talked about movie. I think that'll happen, which I'm excited about. But yeah, I have nothing bad to say about it. Like, did it blow me away as maybe I'd thought based on kind of some of the hype I had heard? Maybe not, but I think it's a very easy recommendation. It was a great watch. Not like super scary, like I said, it had some levity, so it was a great balance. So yeah, this is a perfect movie to throw on. And like I said, I always appreciate a good hour and a half runtime. Couldn't recommend this one enough. This was a great time, I thought. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'm maybe a little lower than you, actually. I certainly enjoyed it. I found the gimmick of the late night talk show aspect just like very endearing and a really fun way to watch a movie. It's a very unique way to tell that story. Also kind of a fun way to twist the like found footage genre that's so overdone in horror these days. I think where it almost fell flat for me is I do think for me it was also overhyped, kind of like you said. Not too much, though, but it was. I certainly went in with very high expectations. I did find the twist to be very predictable because they kind of are not subtle with how they set up some of the intro stuff. And then the way it ended just kind of left me feeling like, that was kind of a letdown. The journey to get to the ending I wholeheartedly enjoyed, but the ending really did not stick the landing for me. And then the other thing I'll call out is my wife actually made this comment, and I wholeheartedly agree with it, but there were choices made with special effects and some other scary stuff that just when it plays out on screen made you think, oh, I'm watching a movie, and kind of took me out of enjoying the actual film. And I did find the environment very engaging, so when those things pop up with special effects, it kind of takes you out of it. I know why they made those choices, but I don't know if it was necessarily done effectively. So I think overall, definitely worth watching, especially if you're into scary movies. I think this is one of the more unique ones to come out in the past few years, but may not necessarily be living up to that festival hype.
Yeah, I think I would ultimately agree with you there. The ending is interesting. We'll certainly get to that in the spoiler section. I guess it maybe stuck the landing for me more, but I will say it was certainly predictable. Kind of like some of the smaller, like reveals or revelations along the way, I thought I appreciated more. And like I said, a lot of them came with a degree of subtlety where it's not like 100% confirmed. It's just like characters are having conversations and they know more than we, the audience, do. So some of those moments I liked a lot more than the ending itself. But yeah, still, I think a worthwhile movie to watch. But yeah, anything else we should get off our chest before going into spoilers?
I think you mentioned a levity. I want to call that out, too. There are some very funny moments, particularly the way they use the band in that traditional like late night manner where they're just kind of playing off each other. Those moments were all great. I think there's a lot of really standout moments in the film. I just think when you look at the body of work, it ended up being a little disappointing.
Yeah, and I can understand that. It's super hard when there's so much hype behind something. So, yeah, I think it's OK to feel a little bit disappointed. But I think we need to talk about why we may feel a little bit disappointed in certain elements, whether it's the ending or otherwise, and we can't do that, unfortunately, without getting into spoilers. So, if you have not seen Late Night with the Devil, again, I think it's still showing in theaters here and there, but as of yesterday, at least at the time of this recording, I do believe it is now fully, you know, you can access it on Shudder, very easy to set up and watch that. But yeah, I don't want to end on a sour note there. It sounds like we both would still recommend people check this one out. I think you'll get a lot out of it, but there are some nitpicks here and there that we'll get into, but
it's certainly not any scarier than the new Zack Snyder Rebel Moon movie. So if you want to be scared, maybe go watch that.
Maybe
instead.
Go watch that. Yeah. We may have to talk about that next week. We'll see. but yeah, so everybody go check it out and then come on back to listen to the rest of our episode, because from here on out, it is all spoilers. All right, everybody, welcome to spoiler territory for Late Night with the Devil. Before we get into all of our thoughts, let's do a little cast, crew, and critical reception talk.
All right, so Late Night with the Devil is directed and edited by Colin and Cameron Cans, who are a brother, a writing and directing team, and this is kind of their big breakout film into the mainstream. Our score for the film is also composed by Glenn Richards and Roscoe James Irwin.
All right, as for your cast, it is anchored by the great David Desmalchian as Jack Del Roy, which is also, I think, a fantastic late night show host name. And then the rest of the cast kind of fill out just the random guests and people working around. You got Laura Gordon as June Ross Mitchell, Ian Bliss as Carmichael Haig, Faisal Bazzi as Christo, Ingrid Torelli as Lily, Reese Atteri as Gus McConnell, Georgina Haig as Madeline, and you got the great Michael Ironside popping in as the narrator. So, whether they're in front of or behind the camera, Austin, is there any major highlights here, positive or negative?
Yeah, I think, of course, David Dasmalchian is the highlight, especially it's really cool to see him get that kind of leading role moment. Other than that, though, I'm going to give my standout to Ingrid Torelli as Lily. It's kind of hard to play that haunted child possessed entity in like a serious manner and make it be believable, especially when you're operating on kind of not only a real life low budget movie, but like a low budget TV set. And her facial expressions and the way she used her eyes, like she stayed creepy throughout, despite maybe some lower quality effects going on around her. So I thought she nailed that performance.
Yeah, I have, I think behind the screen, it's hard not to acknowledge the Cairns brothers because, you know, they wrote, directed and edited the movie. It sounds like that's kind of their go-to process with most of their stuff, which is crazy. So that's very admirable. I think they did a great job for the most part. As for in front of the camera, I think I might go with an actor. I don't know if I've seen him before, but Ian Bliss as Carmichael, I thought was a delightfully like scummy character and like a really, really fun character to throw into this type of story. Like a former magician who acknowledged that he was like constantly scamming people. You know, he was like, it was all fake what I was doing. But it's now like resurfaced to be somebody that debunks people that do that. And so to throw that kind of character in when you're doing like a live possession on a talk show is really funny. So I loved his performance. He was both funny and like scummy and perfect equal measure.
He was a fun surprise in this movie for sure, that character. I was not expecting a skeptic to like kind of be so heavily featured, and I was glad he stayed on the show like throughout the duration of the movie.
Me too, absolutely. But yeah, so there you go. And you know what Asa and I thought of Late Night with the Devil. Asa might be a little bit lower than me, but I think we're still relatively high on it. But what is everybody else saying? And it's all good news. Late Night with the Devil has actually received critical acclaim and has a 97% over on Rotten Tomatoes. The site's critical consensus is, delightfully dark, Late Night with the Devil proves possession horror isn't played out and serves as an outstanding showcase for David Dasmalchian. The performances, production design, and technical aspects were all praised. There has been, I guess, a little bit of negative controversy for the use of AI-generated images at some parts. Maybe I missed that. But I think
it's like kind of three images used in like the TV graphics.
Gotcha,
and according to the directors, they did use AI to like generate that foundation, but then there were still creative people that worked to kind of fine tune how they wanted it to be. And okay. I know people are nervous about AI like popping its head up in film. It's certainly not something that's going away. I have a mixed opinion about it when it comes to like a low budget film. I think you have to save cost where you can. If this was like the MCU or something like that, I think I'd be a little more upset about it.
Sure. That's fair. It sounds like all those positives we mentioned, you and I have already talked about, you know, we definitely agree on those. And I could not, unfortunately, I was very curious, but I couldn't find the film's budget, at least not yet. But based on this team's past and low budget horror filmmaking, my assumption is that their $10.4 million at the box office so far is a big success. And after being out for a month, it debuted on Shudder, like I mentioned, and I'll get even more eyes on it. So I'm very curious, what the rest of this team will do in the future. I want to see some of these actors and actresses pop up in more things.
Yeah, I'm curious how this format continues on throughout the future, because especially the found footage genre, like I thought that was tapped out when it comes to horror. And then this is a new way to do that. So I'm excited to see how other creators take inspiration from this movie.
Absolutely. We shall see. We shall see. Maybe Zack Snyder will utilize some of these elements for Rebel Moon Part 3. But yeah,
he could certainly use a new writer.
Well, as we know, he'll never relent on that. He's like, I gotta do it.
Maybe he'll use it for his extended directing cut for both Rebel Moon movies.
God, did you hear that he also said recently that he like has the director's cut for Sucker Punch and he's just waiting for a chance to release it?
He also wants a fan campaign.
He's just allergic to, like, I don't know. He's like, I'm going to shoot 12 hours of content and never release my intended vision. He's a crazy man. But all right, I think with that, let's go a little bit deeper. Let's get into our freeform discussion here. So the main part of our show where each of us just kind of brings in, writes down the points that we want to spend some more time on. I think this is going to be a fun one. We have some good stuff on here. But yeah, let's start with kind of a general opening. And it sounds like maybe talking about kind of the atmosphere of the film might be a good place to start with this one, because that plays a very major role.
Yeah. What were you expecting when that kind of, I know you mentioned that opening montage of the voiceover and saying this is the final like hidden tapes or whatever that they found. I thought that was like effectively used to save time in the movie. Yeah. I certainly appreciated the runtime as well, like you mentioned. I thought when this like opened up, I thought it was going to be a series of different broadcasts. I didn't realize it was going to be like one continuous broadcast night. So that definitely surprised me.
Yeah, I had no idea. That was something that I guess I had just missed when hearing about kind of the hype build for this movie. I had no idea that it was basically going to be like, you know, here's a quick little prologue we'll do to kind of catch you up in all the goings on of this world and this this late night show. But yeah, I had no idea that like the rest of the movie was basically going to be like a, you know, real time showing you all of the clips like from the show. And then once they cut to commercial break, kind of going behind the scenes, so to speak. And then once they get through all of that, then the movie literally cuts to credits. So, I mean, they really kind of stuck to that being the atmosphere for this movie, which I thought was really cool. I had no idea. Like I said, I had no idea. And that's where I think maybe some of the technical praise for the movie comes in. But like talking about general atmosphere, again, I knew it was, I guess some people were calling it like a horror movie. Again, you know, I know there's like kind of like a spectrum when you say horror, like it's going to be super scary. Like what actually is it? But I don't know. I think the prologue did such a good job of setting me up for the atmosphere because it immediately filled me with like not dread, but just a lot of intrigue. And it was really cool to have that prologue go and like and then give you all this information. Like then Jack Delroy resurfaced a month later and it's like, oh, he's coming back to the show. And then it just like, and here's the lost tape. And then it just like cuts. It says like start of transmission. And then it just starts. And like whenever he's walking out at that point, it's like really eerie because we just heard all this stuff. It's like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. and then the atmosphere, I think, kind of builds from there. And they did a great job of like utilizing each guest that would be on a talk show to like kind of slowly build that dread even more to the point where the first guest, after he like leaves the show, we find out later that he ended up dying on the way to the hospital. So like, I don't know. I think they utilize kind of, and you mentioned the band earlier too, and like then you also have the audience. I think they did a good job of taking the typical things that you associate with like good or bad talk shows and kind of playing around with those elements to create this really, I don't know, like somehow equally goofy and really eerie atmosphere.
And they made it feel like historical too. Like they really nailed that 70s vibe. It definitely felt like when you see old clips of the Johnny Carson show, like you're rewatching that. So I thought they nailed that. And the set design, too, was like impeccable. Yeah. Everything looks so 70s, like low quality, low budget, lo-fi. The way like even the sliding door opens, like doesn't look fully like firm. Like you can tell they're on a set. So like all of it, I thought looked incredible. And then your point on intrigue when the movie opened, I remember being like, OK, so it's one broadcast. How are they going to turn this into a possession story? Like that was the main thing where I was like, I don't know how they're going to pull this off. But I was definitely along for the ride for sure.
Yeah, and I guess that ties a little bit into the predictability nature of the story, but and we'll get to that later, but I still thought it was really cool to have, like, this idea of, like, you know, his beloved wife, the entire world knew that they were the happiest couple, and they loved each other dearly. She gets sick out of nowhere, and then she dies, and then he disappears for a month. They had already mentioned the real-life connection to the Grove, obviously, which anybody out there, I'd recommend do a little Wikipedia deep dive on the Grove. I think you'll... some weird shit. but tying that in. So then I was like, so I was asking the same thing. It's like, so this is a possession movie, right? Then it's like, and then, you know, Jack was known for his controversial association with the Grove. And then he comes back a month later. I'm like, oh no, like what happened in that month where now there's going to be possession elements? And that, I think that's where some of the subtlety of the storytelling came. And I liked whenever we got to Lily and June later. And it's like, so what exactly is Jack's history with them? And like, how long has he known them? So, yeah, so there was some really good kind of usage with that that added to the atmosphere, I thought, too.
I think subtlety is an interesting word because they were so patient, I felt like, with their reveals for the most part and being subtle and not giving you all the information. And then I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth because I know I mentioned I like that intro montage, but that intro montage is not subtle at all. It tells you, here's Jack, his wife died. He may have some shady relations to these people in the woods. And it's like, oh, is it just going to be like a cult did all this? And then that's kind of where the predictability comes out.
Yeah. And I guess the unfortunate thing is that kind of ends up being the answer, at least to a degree. I mean, the cult certainly played a part in like him meeting the devil or whatever you want to call them before. So yeah, I'm kind of with you. It was a little bit disappointing. It's like kind of, like, the most obvious answer ended up being the answer, which was a little disappointing.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they still executed it well, but just maybe not the most exciting idea, if that makes sense.
And I was left with, like, oh, this is building to something insane. And then it never kind of got to those levels for me. When the possession fully breaks out and she starts snapping necks and, like, melting people's heads and stuff, like, that was insane. But it wasn't, like, anything unique that we've seen to the possession genre at that point.
Right. And again, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. It's like, I don't think something has to be unique in order to be good. And like, I don't want to like dog on something for, you know, like playing around with tropes and stuff. But I don't know. I am kind of with you. Maybe since I just watched the movie, I can't fully articulate it yet. I don't know why it kind of bugged me that like a lot of those elements just felt, I'm not like saying they ripped it from other things. It just felt very, very tropey. And I guess maybe why it bugged me was because so much else in the movie, when it came to like that technical standpoint we're talking about, just felt so like fresh and fun. So then whenever you kind of get something, you're like, you kind of like roll your eyes a little bit. Again, it's not bad, but I'm kind of with you. It's like, I guess like everything else was like so like top tier that it made me kind of anticipate or feel like we were going to get something story-wise or possession-wise that felt a little bit new. And not the case. Again, not bad, but I'm kind of with you on being disappointed in that.
Yeah, it's the movie kind of creates its own problem because so much of it is so good that when things are not good, it stands out more against all that quality. How did you feel about the kind of random moments where we got some body horror going on with the worms and the guy throwing up?
Yeah, I wanted to get to that too, because I mean, you know, we were literally just talking about how some of like the stuff, particularly with the possession, was like, okay, we've seen all this stuff before, not super interesting, but man, I couldn't really point to it, but I gotta say, the Carmichael hypnosis scene was really, that might be, I think, the most well-done thing in the movie, because it's weird because they're on a talk show on live TV. There's an actual audience there. But when they're like referencing the audience, they're also talking to us. Like that element of like he's talking to the sidekick, he hypnotizes him and makes him feel like he's literally dying because he ripped open his own stomach to pull out his biggest fear. And that's all these worms. But then you're like, so why isn't Carmichael freaking out? This guy is literally dying in front of him. And then he gets up and he does like feign like, oh, my God, what's happening? And then he just snaps his fingers and the hypnosis ends. It's like we, the audience, got to witness the actual hypnosis. But then like the next level on top of that is that all the characters in the movie that were watching it, they saw what we saw. And then whenever they watch the tape back, they're like, oh, he got us. Like that was such a cool way to show like a magician giving you a gotcha moment.
The unfortunate thing is that is like such a high point. And then that's when the movie kind of like,
yeah,
spirals into its wrapping up, and like the next possession level breaks out and people start dying and then credits are there. And so you're at this like really cool moment where like, oh, maybe they're not all on board. Maybe she's not really possessed. Like maybe they are hypnotizing. And then they kind of just immediately wrap up the film. You don't really get a chance to like sit more in that mystery and kind of have it more stuff play out.
Not really. I mean, you kind of referenced earlier how like, you know, so many aspects of the movie are so good that whenever there are things that are a little bit less than that, they stick out. I think another good example of that is, you know, they really committed, like I said, to like, you know, here's the quick prologue, we're setting up, this is a lost tape we found, and then the entire rest of the movie is just that tape essentially playing out in real time. So whenever it just kind of cuts off at the end and says end transmission, then we go to credits, like you understand why they're doing that, and part of that is cool, but then also part of it is like, oh, I'm not sitting with any of this. But also, I don't think we're supposed to, because that would go against the gimmick of the movie.
None of the characters really are, and like, no one really has to sit with it, and I'm not necessarily saying I need everything to like come out and be explained to me, but I did kind of want more time in the aftermath of everything that had happened. Like I kind of wanted to see how the possession breaking out and then Jack killing Lily. And I kind of want to see how that impacted everybody. And then I wanted more visibility to like how that impacted the cult and like what their overarching role was and things like that. And none of those like more things that I found more interesting about the story they were telling me kind of got explored.
Yeah, it's like weird to say, because obviously this is a demon that had, you know, their hands in a lot of pots, because obviously we saw them on the talk show. Clearly there was a connection with the Grove and the cult that Jack was involved with, because he had met this demon before. He didn't realize it until the end of the movie, but he had met them before. So it's like, what was the purpose of that? Was like the ultimate purpose to get on this live TV show? But then to your point, I think something that kind of jumped out at me, and I think it probably also hurt it because it was one of the last shots of the movie, is you do wonder what the demon's goal ultimately was, because they get possessed again at the end. They put Jack through this like pretty harrowing, I thought, like nightmare sequence at the end that still utilized the set of the talk show, which I thought was really cool. And then whenever he has to like confront what he did, you know, like kind of making a sacrifice to get success, and that sacrifice was potentially being okay with his wife getting sick and dying, and then like stabbing her, and then they reveal, oh, he's stabbing Lily, the demon. And you're like, so was that the demon's plan? Like, are they dead now? Is just Lily dead? Like, it just seemed a little easy. It's just like in his dream, he stabbed something and it turns out that was the demon.
Yeah.
Like, was that the goal? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, the demons' motivations are not explained very well, but like typically demons just want souls.
Yeah.
And so what I got from it and from some further reading too is Jack sacrificed his wife or made a deal with this demon in exchange for fame and becoming the number one talk show host. And the way the demon kind of messed with him is like he got all that, but the way he's going to become the most famous talk show host in the world is after his entire set breaks out and he kills people and he'll never get to work on showbiz again. So the demon ended up getting both, I guess, Jack's soul and his wife's soul that he sacrificed.
Right. So do you think he's potentially possessed at the end there?
I think so. That's how I took it.
Okay, that makes sense. I always like that in movies whenever they play with like the whole dark side of like the genie three wishes thing. It's like, yeah, I'll give you what you want, but it won't be how you expect. I'm going to kill your wife in the process and I'm going to make you basically have all these guests on your show die, and then you will be number one. So there you go.
Yeah, and I guess in exchange, the demon also got all the people in the audience, too, that they started killing.
Yeah, that was interesting. It seemed like a lot of them got out, but then like some of them couldn't stop like rolling down chairs. I was like, so are they all dead? Like, I don't know. But I wanted to spend some more time talking about the talk show gimmick. I think we already talked about it kind of as a whole, but was there any other like kind of like random fun small moments that you liked about it? Because something I liked would be every time it cut to behind the scenes footage and then it would be like in black and white. And I love seeing the conversations in particular between Jack, I can't remember the guy's name, but the producer of the show that kind of walks in and is kind of like the fix-it man. And then also Gus, Jack's sidekick on the show, kind of seeing like their fun behind the scenes of a talk show conversations in between commercial breaks was, I thought, really engaging. And just the which also I think worked to build the dread whenever Gus is like, Jack, you know, we can't be messing with this. This is not a good idea. I think you're a good man, but like people are leaving and like this is bad. And it's like, I don't know. I loved like the commercial break moments.
Yeah, that's what I was going to call out too. I also like the way they use the commercial breaks to tease upcoming things in the show. So I think there's one point in the first commercial break where someone walks by and says like, okay, bring the dagger to my dressing room or something like that. And you're like, oh, there's a dagger. And then at one point, Gus is like, hey, there's like a kid and some chains. And like, it seems like, what do you have planned? Like things are getting crazy. So it kind of seeds those things for you to just kind of look forward and be like, okay, this is going to escalate. I'm excited to see what that's going to look like.
Yeah. And it was also cool because like sometimes when you watch a talk show, it'll come back from commercial break and, you know, the guest, I don't know, like, I can't really describe it. It's like you'll see the guest maybe talking with the host, like they're clearly in the middle of having a conversation, and it's like, and we're back with X or Y. And then you're always like, what just happened? What were they just talking about? So I thought it was really cool to see like Chris do this like fake, like cold reading psychic, whatever you want to call him, literally just have this crazy, potentially like quick possession moment. Right before they cut to commercial break, they cut to commercial break and it's like, oh, you need some water? He's like, I should go. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll get you some
producer
water.
Producer brings some whiskey.
Yeah. And then just watching him like sweat and like be silent during the commercial break. And then just how eerie it was whenever it cuts back to color. Now they're back live on TV and we know it just happened. And you're just watching this guy sit there and stew. It's like, so I liked some of those transitions too. They were really fun.
So did you think Christo was a legit psychic or was he just possessed at that point?
That was another good example of something that I was a little bit caught off guard with. I mean, of course, originally, whenever he comes out and he starts doing the whole classic, you know, psychic thing where he's like, I'm sensing a name, Peter. No. And then you get no reactions like Peter.
Getting a Tim? Timothy?
Sin, maybe. Timothy. Yeah. And then eventually somebody like jumps up and is like, actually, my name's Peterson, or I knew a Peterson. So, yeah, whenever you see stuff like that, you're like, OK, they're doing the traditional psychic thing. And then they even said later on a different commercial break that the guy he was talking to, the Peterson guy, was a plant in the audience, which then makes sense why like every single joke he said was like going over super well because he's probably just like an actual comedian or something. So I thought that was a nice moment. But yeah, I thought the whole Christo thing was great because it's like, OK, so obviously this is fake. But then they go to the family and they're talking about like a dead brother and a dead son. And I was like, oh, so is Christo like, does he kind of get off on the whole thing? Like, well, I'll kind of like play with people's expectations. I'll make them think that I'm like maybe a little bit of a fake, but then I'm going to pull out my actual psychic powers and use those. So I was like, okay, maybe he is real. And then kind of the whole third step in that process is then on live TV in front of everybody, he literally starts screaming. He drops his fake accent and he's just speaking in, I don't know, like a standard American accent. And then he's like, his eyes roll back in his head and he's talking about, there's like a crazy presence here. I was like, oh, maybe he is a real psychic. And he was just kind of like playing with our expectations. Maybe he was, because then he got possessed to a degree. He spit black bile everywhere and then died on the way to the hospital. So they definitely leave us wondering. So definitely there were some plants in the audience, but was he a psychic to a degree? I don't know.
I think he initially was a fake psychic and ended up getting possessed because there was that they're interviewing the mother and daughter who he like spoke to their dead son or brother. And the lady that like ran out whenever Christo fainted and was all concerned, they say like she was out there asking questions about people. So I think he got fed information about the audience.
Yeah, but I like the back and forth of that. And then that leads perfectly into Carmichael, one of our characters we've talked about a lot. Just shitting on him on live TV. It's like, oh, okay. That's pretty funny.
So our next like major point where we spend time with a guest is June and Lily and their interview and her kind of produced tape about the cult where she found Lily. How did you feel about this introduction? And then another standout scene for me was like the live interview where she calls forth the possession and the chair levitates and all that. Like, I thought that was pretty well done and pretty scary when it played out.
Yeah, I really liked this too. Again, you know, talking about like talk show gimmicks, I don't know if talk shows still do it, because I don't watch like full episodes of a talk show. I'll just watch clips, but they probably still do it where at the beginning of the show, they run through all the guests that are about to come on. So I thought it was really cool whenever it goes from the prologue into the actual episode, and they're like, on tonight's show, you have the psychic Christo and like the skeptic Carmichael. Then you have the doctor June. And then it just like shows a picture of this like black book with like red text and a spooky face on it. And it's like conversations with the devil. And it's like, and the subject of the book, Lily. And I'm like, oh my, what the fuck? That's really scary. I don't like that. And so then like, that so you're expecting the entire time once we get through the first two guests, we're like, so what the fuck is up with that Lily? Like, what's going to happen with that? So the whole kind of initial setup and then immediately going into a very dark, especially I feel like for like the 70s, like Jack's like, we're going to show some footage that's kind of based on June's research. But be warned, kids, if you're watching out there, it might be hard for you to watch. It's like showing like a cult murdering kids. Yeah, and like,
but be warned,
like,
kids.
Blood everywhere.
But be warned, kids. This might fuck you up for the rest of your life if you watch this.
Yeah, exactly. I could not have watched that. But yeah, so I think kind of mentioning it in the beginning, building towards that again, like, and then in the initial commercial breaks, talking about like the dagger, for example, like you said, you're like, what are they building to with this June and Lily combo? That seems like very, I don't know if I like that. And then once you get to it, you don't know what to expect. This Lily girl pops out. She seems very happy-go-lucky. Oh, she's so naive. She's looking in the wrong camera. And you're like, what's going to happen here? So yeah, I thought the setup to it was pitch perfect.
And then Lily, like from the time she enters the set to the time the credits roll, her performance is just like, that's kind of what's stealing the show. The way her eyes are unblinking, the way her voice changes and things like that. I thought the possession voice was perfect too, whenever she does get kind of called forth while she is asleep. And I enjoyed the, again, they were very kind of subtle with the way they revealed some things, but with the like, hi Jack, nice to see you again. Like things like that. It's like, oh, how do they know each other? So some things they worked great at teasing out their mystery, and then other things they still kind of just kind of hit you on the head with it and weren't really subtle.
Yeah, and like at moments, like her voice changes and it sounds like his wife, and you're like, what the fuck? Like, she's not even possessed right now. At least you don't think so. So you're like, how do they know each other? And then one of the nice touches is I was like, so Jack was gone for a month, right? And then he comes back and this Halloween show must have been around that. So what is there an overlap with his dying wife and this June woman who at this point already seems to not really like him anymore? Like, they've clearly had a past. Did it happen 2 weeks ago? Was it years ago whenever he was still with his wife and the media portrayed it as like the happiest couple in the world? But like, yeah, she already seems to not like him. And you have to wonder, and it seems it's because like he pushes the Lily angle so hard, and clearly they invited them on the show to maybe do some demonstration. And she's like, I don't know if we should do that. And he's pushing it. And she, yeah, like I said, she already seems like she's kind of over him and just like annoyed by him. So yeah, it was like, those were aspects of the relationship that I like really liked kind of thinking about just through the dialogue that they had. But yeah, then we get to the demonstration, and Lily at this point is already like weirding you out. She's not even possessed yet. And she's like, this is the weirdest girl I've ever seen. But yeah, I love the initial possession. Like, it was very kind of run of the mill, kind of standard, what we expect. But again, I think it like, it was added to because we got this like psychic in the first guest like section where it's like, okay, he's probably a fake. But then you have moments where you're like, oh, maybe he's real. What's going on there? And then you have Carmichael, who's just like spending his entire like segment talking shit about everybody. And then you have this like very kind of standard possession. But then like the fucking chair starts levitating. And then even me, the audience, is like, well, I guess this is real. I guess we're dealing with like a real possession, not a fake one for TV. So it was just a roller coaster. Yeah.
The other thing I did want to get into, too, is the way they chose to use their special effects. There's times, and I get why they did it. One, they're a low budget movie, of course, but two, I did like how everything you see like through the 70s camera looks like shit and kind of looks like 70s special effects. It's an interesting choice. The flip side of that, though, is once I saw it play out, I was like, oh, that looks like shit. And then it would take me out of the movie. And then there were moments like at the end, it would cut to a widescreen whenever Jack is going back through his possession and no longer seeing things through the 70s camera. The picture would fill up the full frame. You'd be in a modern day camera. And then they would like show some things that would look great. They showed what Lily looked like with her possessed face very quickly. And it was like the scariest image of the movie. So like there were times when this could have looked good and been scarier. And then they, of course, committed to their 70s gimmick and made the effects not look great.
Yeah, I'm sure if you overthink it, then you can start to come up with reasons why. Maybe because like that ending, that nightmare sequence is the one part of the movie where I think we're supposed to be. It's not supposed to be like footage of the actual talk show. It's not supposed to be behind the scenes footage where like a camera guy is running around for some reason. Because that's another thing you could kind of nitpick. It's like, so in the commercial breaks, why is there a camera close up at Jack's face in all these conversations? So I get what you mean. But then like also like maybe in the nightmare sequence, it's supposed to be the one part of the movie where we're in his head. So it's supposed to look normal. But something I would say also kind of negatively, not a major negative, again, more of a nitpick because I did really like the movie, but when you're talking about kind of like the 70s footage of like the actual talk show, like whenever it would, you know, it looks grainy on purpose. That's how it looked back then. It was a little disappointing for me. It kind of felt like how people complain about jump scares where they're like, oh, it's kind of manufactured because something jumps into the camera. They play a loud noise and that's actually what's scaring you. It's probably the noise. It's not what's actually happening. So like at the very beginning of the movie, whenever like the film, I don't even know what you call it, but whenever it would break and there'd be like a little bit of static, that was kind of creepy. I was like, ooh, I don't know if I like that. But then by the end of the movie, we kind of got conditioned to like, well, once, you know, the static happens and it gets a little like extra grainy, that's because something scary is supposed to be happening on screen. So then I didn't really care anymore. Or not care, but it's just like it didn't stick out. It was like actually scary. I was like, oh, they're just, you know, they're trying to make us feel, you know, offset by playing with that maybe a little bit too much. But yeah, I'm with you. I think some of the special effects were strange, and yeah, you're right. I didn't really think about that because a lot of it's supposed to be in camera. A lot of it's supposed to be on the talk show.
And I get the choice, but yeah, at the same time, as a viewer, I'm like, why does that look so bad?
Yeah,
like,
because it doesn't change the fact that whenever Lily literally gets electrocuted by two separate like lightning bolts, and like one's going to a TV, one's going to a monitor, and she's like getting electrocuted, and then her whole head opens. It still doesn't look good.
But yeah.
Again, to our point, we understand, you know, it's a low budget movie. Like they're using their resources the way they can. But yeah, I don't know. It still stuck out to me as well. I was like, well, maybe if we can't, you know, do this crazy like possession reveal moment, maybe we should do something different because it just looks kind of funny. But again, a lot of the movie was funny. A lot of it was goofy. So I don't know. Maybe that was their intention. I don't know for sure. But I'm still with you on what you're saying with the special effects.
I do need to tell you about a scene I absolutely hated, though.
Ooh.
It's the moment where they're playing back the possession tape of Lily and they go freeze frame and it's a very quick blip that nobody would have caught any type of image. And Jack is like, I think that's my wife. Freeze frame it. And then you go deeper and deeper. And I'm just like, this is stupid. Like, why are we spending time? Well,
I just laugh at how stupid she looked. I mean, like they finally get to her frame and she looks like Casper the ghost. I laughed out loud. That was so funny. But yeah, lots of maybe unintentionally goofy moments in there. But yeah, I think this is kind of the perfect segue here. We don't usually, whenever we talk about a movie, we don't usually go in kind of order by this, which has kind of been a little bit different. But this is the perfect segue to get into that nightmare sequence. I know we already talked about it. Let's get a little bit more into that and then the kind of immediate ending that happens right after. And using the word predictable is funny because it sounds like you just clocked the reveal at the beginning. I definitely cannot say, you know, with confidence, I cannot say that I clocked the whole, oh, he's, you know, sacrificed his wife for fame. I didn't think that was going to happen.
It wasn't necessarily that I clocked it. It was more of like, I hope that's not all this is.
Well, and that's exactly where I was going. It's like, I didn't clock that specifically, but then as it starts to play out, it's not that like that one element was predictable. It's just kind of the whole ending, like demon element, this cult element that they just keep referencing with the Grove. Like as like a package, it feels quite predictable. So yeah, that's where I was going to kind of bring up and agree with you. Although, again, it's that weird inverse, because I thought we always talk about like idea versus execution. It's like, damn, what a great premise. But man, they just did not have the means to actually make it happen. This is one of the unique examples where I think the idea was just kind of like not bad, just kind of bland. But damn, I thought they executed it so well. The nightmare sequence is literally just him walking through the same set we've watched for an hour and a half. But I was very like unsettled by it. Like, it was really cool, I thought.
Yeah, walking through the set and some of like the old footage we'd seen in that intro was great. Yeah. And very creepy. I just then, like, when the cult leader shows up, like, we've seen this guy once in that, like, one, which I guess, to be fair, we only saw the other clips once too, but that almost felt like something that wasn't part of this story, like that cult leader. They didn't do a great job of connecting the dots that the Grove cult is the same, like, belief system of the cult that June was investigating.
Admittedly, I wasn't 100% sure if that was just a way to kind of like tie into the previous footage of like seeing the cult stuff whenever they were about to bring June and Lily out on out onto the set. I don't know if like the whole worshipping Abraxas was also the Groves thing, or if they were just kind of like, oh, you remember this guy and it started with the demon, let's bring him in. But either way, I think just like kind of making that like weird owl dressed leader, I mean, I guess that was the demon, right? Wasn't that supposed to be the same demon?
I think
so. Yeah, it's like that whole thing was where it got like a little bit like, okay.
It's weird choices. I also was thinking that at some point it was going to be revealed that like the audience members were the cult and he was performing for them. Because they kept like honing in on like costumes in the audience too.
Yeah. I thought I loved that element of like bringing the silent guy in the skeleton outfit who like was, I guess, present in the audience. And then just like having them like eerily, like creepily stand there in the nightmare sequence, like during the Grove. I was like, is that guy real? Like, was that guy really in the audience? So yeah, there were some cool moments there. As the nightmare scene was actually playing out, I thought it was going to be like an even, you know, wilder twist. And like, what I'm about to say, like, isn't a novel concept either. But I thought maybe it was kind of what you were getting at, that like everything that we saw, this like lost footage, maybe it was just like all bullshit. Like the narrator, like none of that was actually true. Like what we're seeing is like maybe just like a pipe dream that this guy that wants to be a successful host is having. Or like, to your point, like everything was fabricated and the entire audience was all just like this memory, this like remnant of kind of the connection to that cult or something. I was like, are they going to do something like really wild like that? I'm glad it didn't go that far. But again, I'm not like super jazzed about what they did either way. So whatever.
Yeah, I thought it was going to kind of be like he was in a fugue state and then of course, the audience like performance was going to be the cult, and then he was going to wake up and realize he was in a ritual sacrifice, and then
right,
it was
something like
end.
That. All that said, I you know, to end positively, again, this is one of those weird episodes where we clearly both were like, at least we can say we liked the movie.
Oh yeah,
but like, I guess maybe like one difference that I have with your take is I did think it stuck the landing. I certainly came away with questions. Did it stick the final shot? No, I don't think so. But I was a fucking sucker for that nightmare sequence. So I think it just left a really good taste in my mouth. Because I don't know, maybe I should have expected it. But like showing all those scenes in the prologue where he's like talking with like the cave woman is a bit on his show. Or like, you know, signing the paper with the boss. Like, it's a 5-year deal, Jack. Welcome to the family. And then at the end, doing like very creepy versions of all those scenes I really liked.
Yeah, that just didn't stick out to me. Like, I thought it was building up. I didn't realize that was the climax. I thought that was the start.
Right, which makes sense. But yeah, before we close out here, I think we may have even asked the same question we were talking about, something like Talk to Me last year, a similar vibe. I don't know, now that this brothers team, who've been active for a long time making movies, and like we said, it seems like this one is the one that's getting a lot of notoriety. It got like a theatrical run. Shudder picked it up immediately. I think this is not the last we're going to see from this team. I'm not talking like an IP specifically, but after watching this movie with like faults and all, is there something or like a type of story you like to see this duo take on next?
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see them take on like a traditional documentary style of media and turn that into maybe not even a scary movie, but just turn it into a movie and see what that would look like. It may be too found footagey again. But I do like this idea of like taking standard formats that we're used to, like a talk show or even something like a Saturday Night Live, and then turning it into a movie and having that be the gimmick. I kind of want to see more of that from this team.
Yeah, I like your pick. You're focusing on the gimmick they employed. Like how could they kind of mine that in future things? I think I'm thinking more about kind of the horror content side. And my immediate thought was like, look, we know how this system works. You make like a lower budget movie, it kind of breaks into the mainstream, and then you're kind of tasked with a much bigger budget project. And I know they've tried a million times, but I think it might stick this time. I know Lee Whannell, who did Upgrade and The Invisible Woman, is doing The Wolfman. I think that's coming out this Halloween, maybe. So I think they're trying to play around with that whole dark universe again. So I think what I'm getting, I'd like
it's
to see
gonna
this
work
team,
this time.
Yeah, we'll see.
They hope.
I'd like to see this team take on, doesn't have to be the dark universe, but like maybe like a traditional monster movie type deal. If this one's like kind of possession, kind of packaged in this like weird, fun, goofy, found footage, documentary style thing, like a period piece also. I wonder what they could do with a monster movie.
Maybe it'll be
a slasher or something like that.
I mean, they could do The Invisible Man and just do another really low budget movie and not even employ an actor. It can all be AI.
Wow. Paul B. AI. People will love that. Well, so before we go down the dark universe well here, because I know we could, by God, we could. Tom Cruise's The Mummy, anybody? Let's do some Arnie's Podcast Awards. The part of our show where we take something positive, negative, or something in between from the thing that we're talking about. In this case, of course, Late Night with the Devil. And we give it an award. Where do we start today? What deserves some praise?
I'm going to give the... Is this part of the movie award? This movie had the most like production company label intros that
I've ever seen.
There were
so many. I'm so glad you called that out. It was like 15.
It was insane. I was like, is this part of the film?
Yeah, this movie's an hour and a half long, and the first 10 minutes are just all the studio names and like the producers
they
listed.
Really had to bid this one out to get distribution.
And as someone that the last 4 years has been slowly working his way through Nicolas Cage's filmography, this is the most I've ever seen. And a lot of his 2011 to like 2018 straight to video movies, man, you'll be sitting there for a couple minutes watching this. But this was unbelievable.
Did you get the trailer for the new Nick Cage horror movie?
Well, no, because again, I watched this on Shudder.
Oh, you streamed it.
But I have seen the trailer.
Dude, that looks good. I actually want to see that.
We may have to do that. It looks good. I'm excited. You know, mine is maybe not super exciting, but I don't know. I got to give like an award to the guy that I feel the most bad for. And that's Gus, you know, just the sidekick of the show. And I think a lot of the talk shows, even the ones that are still on today, sometimes I feel bad for kind of the sidekicks. I feel like they deserve more like praise for all the stuff that they do. And this Gus guy seems like a really good guy. He had job security and then he lost it because his friend and host like went into a deep depression after a loss and then comes back. He's like, oh, I guess we're back. But then they're like the reviews and the views start to go down. And he's like, I guess I'll stay on board with my friend. And then he like brings a live possession as an idea to the show. And then he ends up getting his entire head turned around. I just feel bad for this guy. He deserved better.
I did like the payoff to the bit when Gus was like, well, I don't know, Carr. My wife sure would like me to keep my head. And then at the end of the movie, it gets spun.
That was good. But yeah, with that, thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you hit that follow button so you never miss our upcoming content. Also, please share us with your friends if you enjoyed this episode. We really appreciate that to continue to grow our show. Please leave us reviews as well. Even if you don't want to write anything, leaving us a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever your podcast really does help us out. At the Arnie's is our social, and the Arnie's.media is the website. We'll be back next Tuesday with another episode.
And lastly, we do want to hear from you, so please message us on Instagram at the Arnie's or email us thearniesmedia@gmail.com. What did you think of Late Night with the Devil? When was the last time you accidentally got possessed on late night TV? Will Night Owls ever be revived to finally take down the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson? Anything you say will be on the show and react to it live on our latest episode.
That's right, Austin. And this week we have a good comment. This is for an episode that you unfortunately were not here for. I know you were probably in Japan having a great time and you saw this episode pop up in your feed and you're like, gosh, dang it, I wish I was on the episode where they predicted Fast and Furious 11. I know you're a diehard fan of the franchise. I posted an image, Austin. Even though you're not a fan of the franchise, I think you will appreciate that Vin Diesel, despite having Jason Momoa be the main villain in the last movie, and the idea was that he would carry over, he doesn't want to work with Jason anymore, and now he wants to have Robert Downey Jr. come in and play an Elon Musk type, a guy that runs an autonomous car company because Vin thinks it would be a good idea for his team to go up against cars without drivers, because that's so devilish for the Toretto family.
And, but it also shows that Vin Diesel has no like creative mind, because he can only now see RDJ as Tony Stark.
Exactly. I have a comment here from the real Mr. Robinson, who kind of agrees with my take on this one. He says, if this happens, they would basically throw away Jason Momoa as the main villain the same way they did with Charlize Theron. I swear, having him as a producer was the worst thing that happened to this franchise. Let me tell you, Mr. Robinson, I literally could not agree more. That's why it's ending. It's because Vin is a fucking idiot.
I would say that Vin Diesel would respond to that and say, actually, the tree that hit Paul Walker was the worst thing that ever happened to this franchise.
Quite possible. It's quite possible. R.I.P. the Paul, except whenever you read on Wikipedia that he was actually a guy that routinely dated 16-year-olds. So then I start to feel happy that tree maybe got in the way of his car.
No, that was Pablo.
Oh, shit. Sorry, that was Pablo. You're right. All right, everybody. On that note, let's close out here. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you enjoyed Late Night with the Devil if you watched it. But yeah, have a great rest of your week. We'll see you next time for something fun. Keith will be back. So the trio will be back together once again next week.
We'll be back after these messages from our sponsors.